A Living History production.
I'm Peter Hart.
And I'm Gary Bain.
And together we're Pete and Gary's Military History
Podcast.
The prologue.
Be watching Frankie Howard and up Pompeii, Gary.
Don't you think you should introduce us first?
Oh, yeah. I'm Peter Hart and this is my good chum...
Gary Bain.
I've forgotten your name.
Yeah.
Ships.
What are we doing today, Pete, before the prologue?
Well, we're doing Disaster at Anzac, 7th of August 1915. Doesn't sound good, does it?
No, no. So what is the prologue?
The prologue, well, it's before this all happens, and it sort of puts it in context. I think it puts what happens at the Neck in context. The Turks, as you know, the trench lines had established, and the Turks, they can't help themselves. They're a bit like yourself when in the presence of food or alcohol. They just cannot resist it, and they couldn't resist testing out the Anzac defences. Now, where do you think the weakest point might be in the Anzac defences? Where would you say?
Well, I think the Neck was a particular focus of their interest, as they could just push forward a mere, 300 yards, and they'd burst through to Russell's Top and crack open the whole Anzac Corps position.
That's it. Now, they got some new reserves arrived, the 18th Regiment, and they were attached to Kemal's 19th Division. And he decided
Mustafa
to...
Mustafa Kemal, yes.
Just
checking.
Well, you're right to check, Gary, because you know me. And he decided to try his luck with a night attack on the night of 29th, 30th of June.
Oh, so it's very much a prologue.
It is a prologue. A prologue. There's a thunderstorm. Both sides are really nervy. And the Anzacs, they sort of noticed the preparations being made. Yeah, it's very difficult. People don't realise how difficult it is to hide the fact you're going to make an attack. And they're fully prepared when the Turks charge across the Neck in the darkness, but at 00:15 on the morning of 30th of June. Now, what happens is an absolute slaughter, and you're going to be Trooper Ernie Mack of the 8th Victoria Light Horse.
They're attacked by getting out of their trenches and trying to charge us with the bayonet. You ought to hear the roar of rifles during an attack. It's something tremendous, and you can hardly realise how anything can live through the hail of bullets. As for the machine guns, it's something wonderful to hear them when a few get going properly. Our men sat right up on the parapets of our trenches, and when not firing, were all the time calling out for the Turks to come along and hooting and barracking them. In fact, most of our chaps took the whole attack as a real good joke. As soon as they stopped the first rush, they jumped out of the fire trench and sat up on the parapets and yelled and cursed at the top of their voices, calling out to the Turks to come on and they would finish them.
Now, this is war, if you like. It's never seemed more pleasurable than it did to the men of the 8th Light Horse as they shot down those attacking Turks. And this is what another member said. This is Lieutenant Ted Henty. He said, it was much more satisfactory than the infernal pot shooting through loopholes. Although this is fair sport now, as we are only about 60 yards apart at the widest, and in some places much less than that. To drop so many in that narrow space is not bad, is it? And speaks rather well for the alertness of everyone concerned, as it was a night attack. So, great fun. They'd really finished, they had a great time enjoying themselves. Did the Turks enjoy it?
No, there were some 260 Turkish corpses lying in the narrow strip of no man's land. Now, as you say, this is a prologue, and the Light Horse would be back at the Neck in early August.
So why did we have this tragic preamble? Wait and see, Gary. Wait and see. Although anybody who knows anything about Gallipoli knows exactly what's coming. Now, let's have a quick review of the plans. We rather skated over the plans last time because, to be honest, they were diversion and preparatory operations. You didn't need to go out the plan. But we do now, before the Neck talk. So tell me, what was the plan for the Anzac Corps operations?
Well, it was drawn up largely by their chief of staff, that's Brigadier General Andrew Skeen. Now, key element was a diversionary operation on Lone Pine.
We've done that.
While the fighting was raging on Lone Pine, hopefully distracting all Turkish eyes, the left hook would be launched in a series of four columns marching out from Anzac and along North Beach.
Now, they'd be divided into covering forces and assaulting columns. So what does the right covering force do?
Well, they're to seize the series of Turkish outposts in the foothills commanding the valleys leading up to the Sari Bayir Ridge. Now, this done, the right assaulting column was to advance through Sazli Bayit Deir and Chalak Deir before ascending onto Rhododendron Ridge, which would lead them to their objective of Chanak Berna. So they're going up Rhododendron Ridge.
Yeah.
We always go down Rhododendron Ridge.
Because
we're
not clinically insane.
Yes.
Well, did you think that, you looked at it as a task? How do you feel about that task?
Well, I wouldn't like to do it naked.
Ooh, Gary.
Rhododendron Ridge.
Yeah, that's not prickly, but there are plenty of prickly things out.
Well, it's not rhododendrons, is it? Our good friend from Australia told us that.
No, they were something else, weren't they? Like rhododendrons.
Yeah, I think he called it a strawberry plant.
Ooh. So that's that. Now, meanwhile, what's the left covering force done? You're doing a lot of work here.
Well, they were to advance further along the beach and then up the Agil Deir before securing the left flank by overrunning Damakjelik Bayir.
No, not bad.
Meanwhile, the left assaulting column would carry on further along Agil Deir before climbing the Abdul Rahman Spur leading up to Hill 971. Now, I've been on the ground and that's confusing me. Yeah, so can you imagine you've never been there before? That is really quite complicated. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, last week in the podcast, we covered the diversion operation that we just mentioned at Lone Pine. And we also talked about the preparatory operations at German Officers Trench. Would you say they were successful operations?
No, both failed in their intent. The Lone Pine attack sucked in Turkish reserves from beyond Gaba Tepe, which, as we mentioned last week, ended up closer to Chanak Bair and therefore the crucial point.
Yeah, and the German Officers Trench attack was just a bloody slaughter, achieved nothing, and certainly did not remove the threat of flanking fire from German Officers Trench area on the assaults planned on the neck and the chessboard that were to occur at 04:30 on the morning of the 7th of August. This is problems on top of problems, because the right assaulting column was made up of the New Zealand Brigade, and how are they doing that night?
Well, all of the attacks were heavily reliant on them capturing the Chanak Bayir, that's the New Zealand Brigade, and then launching a simultaneous attack down through Battleship Hill onto Baby 700. So unless the New Zealanders took the Turkish positions from the rear, these attacks were doomed to fail.
And were the New Zealanders doing well?
No.
They were delayed by geography, they were delayed by stupidity of the brigadier, and they were delayed by, well, all alcoholism of the brigadier, depending on your perspective.
Well, and they were delayed by the Turkish.
And the Turks. They were hopelessly behind schedule. So what's going to happen? Obviously they're going to cancel the attacks on the chessboard and the neck, are they?
No, I don't think so, do you? At Anzac Corps headquarters, Birdwood and Skeen considered the situation reports. They knew that the New Zealanders were well behind schedule and still struggling up Rhododendron Ridge. It was a difficult decision. As Skeen put it, and I'm going to be Brigadier General Andrew Skeen, it's not the light horse I'm anxious about. I think they'll be all right. What I hope is that they will help the New Zealanders.
It's a wish fulfilment here.
Yeah.
You want something to be, so you hope it will be.
Yeah, so Birdwood decided to proceed on the grounds that the frontal assault would pin the Turkish garrison down and prevent them from moving reserves to block the New Zealanders. So you could say that was a sacrifice too far.
Now, let's look at that. We'll divide it in two. There's two parts of the attack. There's an attack on the neck. We'll do that last. But the other attack is by the first light horse, who are going to launch an attack. Is it audacious or is it suicidal? I don't know. But the attack would go from Pope's Hill across Waterfall Gully and up onto Dead Man's Ridge and behind onto the chessboard.
Now, we've been there and that's all been cleared now, hasn't it?
It has. And you can stand on Pope's and look across the gully. You can look up you've got on the right, you've got Dead Man's Gully. You've also got, Bloody Angle. You've also got Dead Man's Ridge.
Why is it called Bloody Angle? Why is it called Dead Man's Ridge?
I don't know.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Gary, I wonder if something unpleasant had happened there in the early days of the campaign, around about 3rd, 4th of May.
But you can get there now, and it's all it's all open. The Turkish have had a great job there, actually.
They have, and then behind that is where the chessboard is, where they built a car park, the 57th Memorial, which is excellent, and a place where we get ice cream.
Which is also excellent.
It is. I like ice cream.
When you're on Pope's, you can look down, can't you? You can look across to Queen's Post. You can see all of this. It's such a small area.
It is. So let's have a look at this attack. So this attack is going to take place, at 04:30. And this is let's look at what they say. So who am I going to be?
Well, you're going to be Lieutenant Geoffrey Harris of the 1st New South Wales Light Horse.
Fine body of men. And he sets off up Waterfall Gully, into Waterfall Gully at 03:30. And he's trying to get in place ready for the 0 hour, which we said was 04:30. Now, against the odds, they have some initial success. It's quite impressive. And this is what he says. I fell in my little party of 12 bomb throwers and 12 riflemen with fixed bayonets in support. The latter had orders not to fire a shot without orders, but to use the cold steel. We marched silently down our communication trenches to the gully, where we waited 10 minutes while the engineers opened the barbed wire entanglements for us to get through. Then up to the waterfall, which we scaled, to be met by a shower of Turkish bombs before we had time to get into any sort of order. I immediately gave the order. He likes saying order, doesn't he? Gave the order to charge, and we quickly took the first two lines of trenches in our course, bombing the Turks out. Our bombers went on and took the third line trenches on a narrow front, and we could just see the Turks getting back along their communication trenches. It was just breaking daylight when we went over the hill to be met by the Crescent Trench, full of Turks, half out of their trench, waiting for us. Machine guns were barking on three sides of us. Seeing that we could get no further, I gave the order, "Dan!" And we went to earth just as a bullet hit my shoulder. Sergeant Ellis went down on my right, killed instantly, riddled with bullets at close range. Luckily, I fell in a small depression out of sight of the Turks. And we've been up, and he's clearly talking about the ridge, Dead Man's Ridge.
Dead Man's Ridge, yeah.
Leading up. And there must have been a crescent trench across it in front of where the chessboard. Why is it called a chessboard, Gary?
Because it looks like a chessboard.
Yeah. Criss-cross trenches, yeah.
Now, all over Dead Man's Ridge, the various scattered parties of the 1st Light Horse tried to consolidate their tenuous position, clinging to the steep slopes. And this is Corporal David Lindsay of the 1st New South Wales Light Horse. At present, I'm lying on the side of the hill trying to keep under a bit of cover. Bombs are terrible. Dead all around. God help and protect me. I'm not scared, but it's hell. Could not hold position. Bombed out of it. I was dodging bombs all the time. Write in this as I rest on the way back. Suppose we will have another go again later on. It's hell right enough. Where I was lying on the hill, there were 4 dead chaps beside and in front of me. No one living. Bombs, I think. Don't think we ran when we retreated. We damn well walked. Most of us, especially the survivors of the charge, are very weak and feel sore and bruised all over the body where sticks, stones hit us as they were chucked up by exploding bombs. Four or five of our wounded chaps are still lying out under the Turks' trenches. I would volunteer to go and have a cut for them, but it's sheer suicide, and I could no more carry a man at present than a fly. I'm too sore, and I feel very weak.
I think that's... And to think we walked across where this all happened, it's quite chastening to think about what went on. Matt McLaughlin, our... I got his name right. I forgot to say... But he always says there's nothing better to understand something than to actually walk the ground. And it's the closest you get. You're not experiencing what they experienced, are you? You know that. But you're getting a better idea of what happened and why it happened.
And actually, you don't need much imagination to see it. You know, there's... Unlike the Western Front, where a lot of things have been cleared away, the Turkish leave things there. So you can use a little imagination and you can... You know, see the horrors that they're undergoing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, at one point, some of them, as the first chap mentioned, managed to get a foothold in a couple of bays in the Turkish trenches. Do you think that that was a positive sign?
Well, no, because it just triggered more slaughter on both sides. And this is Major Hannes Bey of the 3rd Battalion, 27th Regiment, 9th Division, 5th Turkish Army.
You're just showing your knowledge there, aren't you? Notwithstanding the great losses they suffered, 8 or 10 of their men managed to penetrate a covered area of our trench. All the same, very few of them, and of those who came to their aid, managed to escape, with the remainder being toppled. The battle ended at 0700, and as it was a very violent battle, we suffered 52 dead and 166 wounded. I submit also the information that the artillery fire on our trenches following the repulse of the enemy resulted in the partial destruction of our trenches and caused most of our casualties. And that's interesting because it's the artillery that's killing. That great attack, all the courage of the first light horse, and it did next to nothing. And while we think about that, we'll just take a short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
In the end, the 1st Light Horse were all forced to retreat with nothing achieved. The attempt by the 2nd Light Horse surging out from Quinn's Post towards the chessboard was also repulsed, as the 50 men in the first wave were cut to shreds by machine guns from not only their front, but from German officers' trench and dead man's ridge on either side of them.
Now, can you picture, you know where we do the exam, that when we talk about the attack on May the 3rd, that area there where the British, the Royal Marines attack broke down, and that they were the dead men on the ridge. You can see you're standing there, you're facing the chessboard ahead of you, and then if you look right behind you, remember how we do, there's German officers' trench, and then on your left, there's Dead Man's Ridge where the trench is still up. You could see they're going to get shot to bits, aren't they?
They are, and it's good because their commanding officer, Major G.H. Bourne, he had the strength of mind to call off the attack, and he therefore avoided further useless slaughter.
Ooh, a man taking the initiative.
And taking responsibility.
Yes, I think, well, let's just remember that. Well, and remember, we're not going to be critical of any officers who are in terrible situations and being very brave. But we just want to just remember that.
It's types of bravery.
Yeah. So, what's next?
Well, so it is that the 3rd Light Horse Brigade go over the top at the neck and into legend, frankly.
Yeah, mainly helped by that Gallipoli film from, was it the 80s or the 90s? It's got that that horrible Australian in it.
Can you narrow that down?
Gary! Right.
Getting back to the podcast.
Where's my editing pencil?
They would go over in 4 waves, 150 men in each, and with the 8th Light Horse having the dubious honour of going over the top first.
So who would go second? That'd be the 10th Light Horse, yeah.
So there's a slow preliminary bombardment, and it blazed into real life at 0400 with shells pouring down onto the Turkish trenches at both the neck and the chessboard.
Now, this is interesting because let's think about it. Are the New Zealanders anywhere near, or are they completely irrelevant to this battle?
Well, completely irrelevant.
They're actually, at this time, on the tabletop. So they're funnily enough, you could see them. They're on your left.
Now, as ever, the barrage looked far more destructive than it was.
Well, they're in trenches, Gary.
And its effect was further diminished when it ended prematurely at 0423.
Oh, dear. Now, there's a controversy about this. And I find these controversies a little bit forced, don't you? Because they're sort of ignoring the issue. I've got something in mind. I'm a naval historian, and I'm thinking of the Battle of Jutland and the timings.
Oh, you're talking about the timings.
The timings are all out.
Yeah.
They're up to 3 minutes either side.
Well, that's because timepieces in 1915 are inaccurate.
They're accurate to about 3 minutes, which is, if they're accurate to within 3 minutes, that's a 6 minute possibility. So you can be 3 minutes early or 3 minutes late. That's 6 minutes.
Yeah, but what about synchronisation? Surely that would solve that.
No.
Why not?
Because it always goes wrong.
Okay. So inadequate synchronisation.
Yeah.
Poor time pieces. And that's probably the most likely cause.
Yeah. I'm not sure it made any difference. See, this is why I really think it's, I'm not sure it makes any difference because the situation is awful anyway. I mean, what the Turks, they're just, can you imagine?
They're waiting, aren't they?
The barrage stops. What would you do if you were a Turk and that barrage stopped?
Well, you'd get ready for an assault that you know is coming.
You'd get cock your rifle, get your machine gun, make sure it's working. All to either side, the machine guns to the left and right and further back would be getting ready. So what happens now?
Well, we're going to introduce a very brave character now, a Lieutenant Colonel Alexander White. Now, he insisted on leading his men over the top, which was a very courageous gesture, but at the same time, he thereby neglected his real role, which was in providing tactical leadership. Now, we'll come on to that a little bit later, and we'll give a different example. But there were waves, and he's gone out with the first wave, very brave, knowing full well that he was likely to either be seriously wounded or killed. And there are further waves.
There are. It's a very difficult subject, and we don't want to criticise, we just want to raise the issues. The other issue is perhaps the Light Horse should have attacked immediately the barrage stopped. It's a confused situation, and people, there's not enough time to get a new set of orders out to up and down the line. I know the line's not very long, but it just happens as it happens. So what time did the first wave go over?
0430, and in front of them lay the neck, listen to this, just 25 yards across at the narrowest point, with 60 bare yards to cross to get to the Turkish trenches. I mean, that is such a small area.
Well, we said Lone Pine's like a football pitch. This is more like a bloody tennis court. So let's hear. What does Sergeant Cliff Pinnock of the 8th Victoria Light... By the way, the 8th Victoria Light... Well, 8th Victoria Light, aren't they the guys who shot the Turks to bits?
Good point, yes.
In our prologue. Oh, they enjoyed it, so they'll probably enjoy going the other way, will they? No, they won't.
And this is Sergeant Cliff Pinnock. They were waiting, ready for us, excuse me, and simply gave us a solid wall of lead. I was in the first line to advance, and we didn't get 10 yards. Everyone fell like lumps of meat. All your pals that had been with you for months and months, blown and shot out of all recognition. I got mine shortly after I got over the bank, and it felt like a million-ton hammer falling on my shoulder. I was really awfully lucky as the bullet went in just below the shoulder blade, round by my throat, and came out just a tiny way from my spine, low down on the back. It was simply murder.
I mean, that's a great description. That expression, fell like lumps of meat, just strikes a chord with people. And also the fact he was awful lucky, and then you hear where the bullet went and you think, well, he was very lucky, but I wouldn't fancy that, would you?
No. Now, fire poured in from ahead, from the left and from the right.
So it's coming from over the valley on the left towards the Turk's Head or whatever it is. I can't remember the name of it. And then it's coming from the right from German officers' trench. It's coming from the chessboard. It's coming from bloody everywhere.
And there's no question about the presence of machine guns this time.
No, sometimes we argue about whether there's machine guns in the original landings, but there's bags of machine guns by this time. And the open ground, that tennis court size area, is just alive with bullets. And what happened to the first wave then?
Well, it's down in the dust and dirt within 30 seconds. The gallant White and all the officers who attacked with him were wiped out in seconds, riddled with bullets.
Now, there was a terrible problem. And the problem is that they have yellow and red signal flags that are intended to give an idea.
To indicate the progress, yeah.
Well, what happens?
Well, one of them had been reported briefly fluttering in the Turkish front line on the right flank of the attack.
So on the right-hand side, as you look at it.
Now, this meant nothing. Whoever was carrying it had surely been butchered. But the report would engender false optimism in higher authorities, with fatal consequences for the men in the third wave.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, Colonel White was with the first wave. He's now dead.
Yeah. It would have made no difference, this signal flag, to the second wave, because they would go over the top just 2 minutes after the first. Was there anyone there to stop them? This is we're not getting at Colonel White, but was there anyone there to... We are therefore getting at him, I suppose. Was there anyone there to stop them?
No, because he's dead. And most of the officers that were with him. Now, somebody who did go over the top was a Lieutenant Andrew Crawford of the 8th Victoria Light Horse. And you're going to tell us what he said.
Yeah, he was in the second wave. So just 2 minutes after that first, he says this. There was a din of rifles, machine guns and bombs. On mounting the parapet just in front of us was a double row. There was a double row of Turks with bayonets fixed firing at us. Most of the first wave were down, either killed, wounded or had taken cover. I was soon laid out with a couple of bullet wounds in my body and a graze on my head. I could not move and was eventually dragged back into our trenches, while the Turks seemed to pause for a few minutes, realising that they had stopped the attack. Now, Trooper Alex Borthwick, he has an unfortunate thing. Where's he shot, Gary? Where? There'd be a big target with you.
Through the buttocks. And
just one?
No, the buttocks. He'd already been shot, as you say, when he was badly menaced by the bombs lobbed by the Turks into no man's land. And this is Trooper Alex Borthwick, also of the 8th Victoria Light Horse. It hurt for a moment, but I thought to myself, I'm wounded and I have a good excuse to retire. But finding it was nothing, I had to continue to lie there, while the Turks from their trenches, 10 yards away, were throwing bombs onto the top of my ridge. How I escaped being killed, I don't know. The bombs are round like a cricket ball, and one rolled over my neck, bumped alongside my body, and burst a little lower down the hill. The bombs killed a lot of men that day. They make frightful, ghastly wounds.
Yeah, So far, it's been a complete failure. Now, the next to go over are the 10th Light Horse, who are commanded by Lieutenant Colonel Noel Brazier. They're going to be the third and fourth waves. So it's pretty simple. Now, what does Brazier do?
Well, he rushed back to the brigade headquarters to try and get the attacks abandoned. But now the question of the cursed signal flag, briefly seen in the Turkish front line, obscured all reason. Brazier was ordered to follow up this success by the 8th Light Horse. And of course, as we've mentioned a number of times, Colonel White couldn't support the efforts of Colonel Noel Brazier because he was dead.
Yeah, which is unfortunate and incredibly sad, and what a brave man. Now, there's something worse, because this is awful, really awful, because the Brigadier General was Frederick Hughes.
Yeah.
And he wasn't there, was he?
No, he'd left his headquarters to observe the attack, which put himself out of touch, and therefore it fell to his Brigade Major, which is one Lieutenant Colonel Jack Anthill, to brusquely order them to push on. And so it was that the third wave was all over at 0445, and by now they all knew it was hopeless. Now, I'm just going to give you an example of a different officer. Anybody who's listened to the podcast or knows a bit about Gallipoli will have heard of the now Lieutenant Colonel Guy Geddes. He was a captain on the 25th of April. And he was in command of the 1st Munster Fusiliers. They'd been moved up into the line as one of the battalions ordered to attack at 22:30 on the 6th of August.
Diversion.
But the chaotic circumstances in the front line were such that Geddes was prepared to risk his whole career to try and stop what he rightly judged to be a futile gesture. At 2200, he sent a message to Brigade Headquarters. I want you to listen to this message and read between the lines, Pete. The chaos is indescribable. I've only 50 men of my battalion with me. I cannot state when I shall be ready to attack. The firing line is subjected to heavy rifle and machine gun fire. The left of the Worcestershires is uncertain. I've informed the Dublins I am not ready to attack and not to do so till I inform them that I am. So in other words, he's telling his headquarters,
No,
I'm not doing it. Now, that's a bravery of a different kind.
Yeah, all we're making the point is there's different sorts of bravery. Not even sure which sort of bravery is right. Let's go back to White. I've seen a very emotional portrayal in a television programme where the officer tells him to go. And so the Colonel White, starts putting on his kit and says, he's going to go over the top of the men. And the bloke says, what are you doing? You don't have to go. It's suicide. And the idea is, yeah, it's suicide. If my lads are going, I'm going to go. How admirable is that? It is.
And brave.
But he could have saved some of those lads' lives if he'd cancelled, been in there. I doubt if he could have cancelled a second wave. But he could have helped Brazier cancel a third and fourth wave.
Yeah, in the case of Geddes,
it's a harsh criticism, isn't it?
It is, but in the case of Geddes, he'd saved his battalion and they were able to fight another day.
And he could have been sat. He wasn't.
No,
but he could have been. That could have been, because the British called Stellenbosch, isn't it? Later in the war, you're out. You're not, you know, not sufficient. Now, there's another point about this. Who is it who actually? So, Brigadier General Frederick Hughes, he's off at.
Yes, so you're referring to Lieutenant Colonel Jack Anthill, who's been portrayed in a number of ways.
Yes, well, famously in the Gallipoli film with, I've forgotten his name still.
Mel Gibson.
Mel, thanks. I said he was a horrible Australian. And in that, he's clearly British. He speaks in a cut-glass British accent, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Is he British?
No.
And how can you tell, even in the film, they don't have the guts to...
He's wearing the Australian flash with the rising sun thing on it.
And he is actually a bullocky Australian, to use a technical term. Not bollocking, bullocky.
So it was that the third wave, as I mentioned, goes over at 0445, and this is Trooper Charles William of the now, we're dealing with the 10th Western Australian Light Horse.
Yeah, and by this time, this man knows it's hopeless. And this is where, and we've seen it in all the films, where they're pinning up messages to their thing. And Pope, I think, we go and see his grave. And just leaving messages and last things. And this is what William says. I was in between the sergeant and the sergeant major. blimey, he's in trouble. The sergeant said to me, being the youngest fellow in the regiment, now listen to me, lad, there's no hope for us. So as soon as you get over the top, lie down. I was pushed down. I wasn't allowed to lie down. So you can imagine this. Yeah. Fortunately, we got into a groove in the land and we lay there all day until night came and we crawled back into the trench. Again, fantastic courage by that sergeant and the sergeant major. And you can imagine, remember that you've just had. Now, Gary, we've just done a little article about your original training sergeant.
Yeah.
And you hated him at one point, didn't you?
Yeah, but that was the point. That, you know, that's deliberate on his part.
Yeah. And what he really had your best interests at heart, in
absolutely.
A sense.
And I'm going to use a word perhaps maybe would be a surprise. We all loved him by the end of it. You know, it was such a shock when he died recently.
And surely this is the sort of behaviour, that sergeant and the sergeant major pushing the young lad down. That's the sort of thing I can imagine your old sergeant doing. Get down, Bane, you bastard. I can just, do you know, you can just see him.
Well, he's in effect, he saved his life.
Yeah.
You know, he is saving
and that. How do you think the sergeant and sergeant major did?
Well, I'm pretty sure they didn't survive.
Now, Brazier, back to Colonel Noel Brazier. What's he doing?
Well, he's trying desperately to stop the Fourth Way charging. And indeed, he had an angry confrontation with both Anthill and Hughes.
Hughes had come back by this time, yeah.
Tragically, while he was back at the brigade headquarters in all the uncertainty, the fourth wave went over without clear orders at about 05:15.
Yeah, it's not quite clear, Gary, whether they all go over or just part. I'm not. There are Australians, perhaps listen to this, who know far more about this than us. We're just paying tribute to these very brave men. You're going to be Sergeant William Sanderson of the 10th Western Australian Light Horse.
The rhododendron bushes had been cut off with machine gun fire and were all spiky. The Turks were too deep in the trench ahead. There was at least one machine gun on the left and any number in the various trenches on the chessboard. The men who were going out were absolutely certain that they were going to be killed, and they expected to be killed right away. The thing that struck a man most was if he wasn't knocked in the first 3 yards.
Well, Trooper James Fitzmaurice did slightly better than that. He got about 20 yards down before he took cover. And this is what he said. He's 10th the Light Horse, of course. He said this. As soon as we went to ground and kept your nose to the ground. Never moved. If you lifted your head at all, you would have got it. We were fortunate. We were in a little depression. You were just waiting for orders, listening. We were there about 3/4 of an hour. And then we got the order to retire. That was passed along the line several times. And we retired, turning round on our bellies and crawl back with our noses that close to the ground, you know you couldn't get any closer, and fell back into our trenches. Now, again, Gary, you've seen those trenches. The first trench is, I think, where the line of hedges is, we think. But the second trenches and third lines have been cleared. We have stood in those trenches, and they're still there, aren't they? Are they little sort of dents in the ground?
No. They're well excavated trenches.
Excavated. But they are they? And it you can stand where you can see what happened. And another place to see what happened is in the actual graveyard, which is clear like the top would have been. Now, what else was meant to happen?
Well, a secondary follow-up attack by the 8th Royal Welsh Fusiliers had been planned to burst out of Monash Valley between Russellstrop and Pope's Hill and was entirely conditional on success at the Neck. In the confusion, however, at 05:10, the go-ahead was given by the staff of the 3rd Light Horse Brigade. The result was a predictable failure as the Turks threw bombs down the steep slopes to deadly effect. The attempt was soon abandoned. There was no way through the Neck on the 7th of August.
So, sorry, I've got a frog in my throat. It's not emotion, although this isn't. When you stand there, it's difficult not to almost be emotional. All these attacks have been absolute failures. They were pursued with the utmost gallantry, weren't they?
Yeah.
But there's something wrong. What is it?
Well, as serious operations of war, they were nothing more than unprofessional madness.
Why?
Well, men cannot advance against mass machine gun fire. Courage alone cannot win through. Utter failures effortlessly dealt with by the local garrison furthermore do not divert in reinforcements.
You see, now the we've looked at. Funnily enough, no one ever mentions the First Light Horse, the attacks at German officers' trenches, forgotten the attacks on the attacks on the chessboard from Quinns and from Pope's, not really mentioned. The neck has just swamped it all. I think probably because of that film, Gallipoli. But what were the casualty rates for the 8th and 10th Light Horse?
372 casualties, of which 234 were dead.
Now, that is terrible. But I'll just say, the thing is, it's just one of many disasters. It is just one. Did it have anything really to do? Who was to blame? What's going on?
Well, there's a populist Australian attempt to link the slaughter there with the British failure to progress as planned at Suvla. That's a red herring. Their slender hopes of success on the neck rested, as we've said, on the New Zealanders' capture of Chunuk by ear, and it had nothing whatsoever to do with the British at Suvla. Moreover, the Gallipoli campaign is riddled with similar disasters that few now choose to recall.
Yeah, let's just raise, for instance, the British diversionary attacks at Helles in the same days, the 5th, 6th, 7th of August, when they get absolutely mullered. The casualty figures are atrocious. But the neck has got a particular, poignancy. But I want to go back to the prologue now. Why do I want to go back to the prologue?
Well, because I think who now remembers the Turkish attack, which had an almost identical butcher's bill on the very same ground on the 29th, 30th of June. Ironically, as you make the point in the podcast, it was the self-same light horseman that had revelled in dealing out the death and destruction on that occasion.
Well, they're being hammered themselves. They're getting it from the other side. And I think war is just full of these tragic ironies, I suppose. And that is one of them. And it's worth remembering. When you stand, and I always try and, when we go there, and we go, it's a must visiting the neck. It's an amazing place. But we always try, right, our main interest is in the Australian attack there, but we always try and remember that exactly the same happened to the Turks on the same ground and that they were human as well. And we always make that point, don't we? It's a terrible scene. Do you think people get the chance to go to Gallipoli with us ever?
Well, we're going this year in May and first week of October. And we've still got a few places if people want to come on. I cannot say enough how different the ground is to that of the Western Front. It's as close to living history as you can get. Oh, I've just mentioned living history. Matt will love me for that.
Yeah, well, you are a consummate professional, Gary.
Cheers, Pete.
If you want to come with us, get in touch via social media. Cheers, Gary.
Thanks for listening to the show.
Blah, blah, blah.
If you'd like to support us,
blah,
you can now buy us a coffee.
Blah, blah,
visit www.buymeacoffee.com/PGMH.
Or visit www.blah, blah, blah.
And we'd be jolly grateful.
Selling a little? Or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook to learn more about each episode. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you have a couple of options. You can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/PGMH or consider subscribing to the podcast for only £2 per month and get ad-free listening and bonus content. You can find links for both on our Facebook and Twitter accounts.
Sounds great, doesn't it?